This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 7th at 10:41 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like now that the state is reopened, people will actually have jobs to go back to.
I tell you, the roads are still pretty empty. All right, let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and the Snollygosters, those shrewd, now sometimes masked, politicians who serve us. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. Coming up later in the podcast, can protests go too far?
But first, Ohio has started to reopen for business. This week, factories, distribution centers, construction sites, and offices that were forced to close during the stay-at-home order are now allowed to reopen. So what changed this week? Not much.
Yeah, as you said, roads are still largely empty. There certainly were no traffic jams Monday morning, offices remaining largely empty still. Most factories, warehouses, construction sites were open anyway, and the large auto manufacturers in Ohio still not up and running. So for them, really just more of the same.
Yeah, I think it just shows that even though the stay-at-home order has been lifted and you have to take precautions when you go back to work, a lot of folks are still not ready to go back to work.
Yeah, I think it'll feel different once we get back into restaurants. Those are such a cultural hub for Americans. We're recording this Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon. We're supposed to get more news from Governor DeWine on when and how restaurants can reopen. Also could get some news on barber shops, daycare centers. A lot of things could happen today. That will help things feel more normal, at least culturally. I don't think economically we're going to be there for a while. As of this morning, 60,000 Ohioans filed for unemployment in the past week. So it does seem to be easing. You could say the unemployment curve is flattening, but it's still going up. We're not seeing decreasing unemployment, and we're not going to see that for any time soon.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, but the stay-at-home order had a lot of exceptions. And let's face it, there are a lot of factories and warehouses, distribution centers, and I never saw a construction site that was completely shut down in the 2 months that the stay-at-home order was in effect. So for those folks, they were going to work anyway. I think it's mainly the office buildings, I think. You know, we're in Columbus, so Ohio State, where we work, is shut down. It's a state of emergency. It's not closed. But anyone who can work from home is working from home. I think the white-collar jobs in Columbus and other cities, those folks can work at home. They have computers at home.
Nationwide, a lot of bankers can work from home. One thing that we have seen really pop up lately, the politics of mask wearing. In the legislature on Wednesday, if you were a Democrat, you wore a mask. If you were a Republican, you did not. Larry Householder giving comments on why the House approved a bill to limit the powers of Dr. Amy Acton and Mike DeWine when it comes to public health orders. Not wearing a mask, and it's a really political thing right now.
There were a couple of Republicans who were wearing masks, not many, but it was pretty partisan. I think all Democrats wore a mask, and there were a few Republicans that did wear a mask. But it's just weird how it's become sort of a political symbol of, I'm not afraid of coronavirus. And the excuse was, well, I'm not wearing a mask because where I live in my rural Ohio county, there's not many cases of coronavirus. First, we don't know that because we're not testing anybody. 1.4%, I think we're up to now. And second of all, okay, you from Vinton County or rural county, and you come to Columbus, you can still get coronavirus when you're in Columbus.
Yeah,
you can get it in between
more likely
the rural county and Columbus. So it doesn't make any sense. I understand people don't want to wear a mask. That's fine. It's their choice, I guess, under the stay-at-home order, but
under the current one, right? I mean, Governor DeWine had a chance to make these masks mandatory. They've done it in California with the stay safe order from Gavin Newsom there. We had a chance to do that. We chose not to.
Yeah, employees are supposed to wear masks at work. That, according to the Stay Safe Ohio order, if you're at work, you're supposed to wear a mask. If you're out in the public, I think you can take it off if you're in your office in a private space. So does that apply to the legislature? Probably not, because that would cross over the branches of government, but you would think a lawmaker in a room full of other lawmakers would be mandated under the stay-at-home order to wear a mask, but of course,
there's a lot of jokes here to be had about whether they're really working.
Well, they are debating anyway.
They are. They're technically working.
And it's so – we'll get to more of that later with our Snollygoster of the Week. The whole – this is where they've taken a stand is on masks, which to me just...
I was mocking Governor DeWine last week because what he said that he retracted this directive on customers wearing masks because some people thought it was offensive. Like, I just don't understand how that is a step too far. I don't understand.
When you've shut down bars and restaurants.
Right.
That's pretty offensive.
When there's more than 1 million Ohioans on unemployment because of directives that... Your intentions may have been good, but because of these directives you made, more than 1 million Ohioans have to be on public assistance.
Yeah.
And telling people they have to wear a mask when they pick up a pizza is offensive.
Anyway.
As evidence as just how much the state's economy has stopped, the state reported massive losses in revenue this week. In just 2 months, the state has lost about $1 billion in lost sales and income taxes. It went from a projected $200 million surplus to an $800 million deficit. So Governor DeWine ordering some big budget cuts.
We will reduce Medicaid spending by $210 million. K-12 foundation payment reduction will be $300 million. Other education budget line items, $55 million. Higher education, $110 million. All other agencies, $100 million. And that totals up to $775
million. $775 million in budget cuts, and what hurts is going to make all those cuts in just 2 months. They will have to be made. Every school district will lose about 3.5% of its yearly state funding. Medicaid sees that cut, but not a reduction in coverage because the state got some additional federal funding. So we're not going to see a reduction in coverage of folks who need Medicaid to pay for their health care bills. The state still is sitting on nearly $3 billion. It's in its rainy day fund, but the governor won't touch it, at least not now.
I know that I have said that it's raining. But we really do not want to tap into that fund yet. This rain is not a passing spring shower. It could be, we don't really know, but could be a long, cold, lingering storm.
A lot of rain metaphors there. A lot of it is a rainy day fund. I understand the language he's using there. But I think he's being prudent. I understand why he's not tapping into the rainy day fund yet. This could be a years-long affair. Who knows how long this whole economic downturn could last?
Yeah, I think it's my guess is because it's percentage-wise, it's not that huge a cut. I mean, it's unexpected, and school districts, for instance, were not planning for it. The federal money eases the pain on Medicaid, which is a huge part of the state budget. They think they could absorb these cuts with minimal disruption for 2 months, and then the next budget year. Fiscal 21, they must have some projections that show that's going to be really rough. And he's saying, let's hang on to the rainy day fund until then.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, $3 billion. That would go a long way toward easing any state deficit. As John Kasich likes to say, when he took office, there was 89 cents in the rainy day fund. So being the fiscal hawk that he was able to build up this fund. And so looks like a good decision at this point.
We joked, the Wall Street Reporter's joked. It was a question Laura Bischoff from the Dayton Daily News asked Governor DeWine. She asked, well, you've been talking with all these former governors, Governor Celeste, Governor Taft, Governor Strickland. She asked him, had he talked to Governor Kasich? And he said he had. My joke was that Kasich told him, don't touch my rainy day fund, because he's the one responsible for building it up. And we're going to need it, which is what Governor Kasich said all along. But, you know, I think the legislature wants to tap into it. Larry Householder mentioned that maybe we should tap into it a little bit for some of the more rural school districts who are really going to have a hard time, even in these 2 months, making up for these cuts. But
yeah, it's not a lot of money percentage-wise, but it is a lot of raw dollars. Here in Columbus, Columbus City Schools is going to lose $9 million. Ohio State University is going to lose $15 million. I mean, you could make the argument some fiscal conservatives have on Twitter that Ohio State should lose all its state funding and schools like Shawnee State University should not have their funding cut. I think that's the basic argument that Larry Householder is making there.
Yeah, I think that, but, you know, Ohio State is a huge employer, a huge driver of the economy,
a
huge driver of research dollars. How do you pick winners and losers during a crisis? And and I think also out there is they're hoping the federal government comes through with some assistance. So why drain the rainy day fund now if over the summer lawmakers in Washington, I hate the term bailout, offer some assistance to state and local governments?
Speaking of Larry Householder, the Ohio House was back in town, back at work this week. Many members there are not happy. They're not happy with the economic shutdown. They're not happy that they have not had much of a say in how the state is dealing with coronavirus. So GOP House members led this effort, and in the House, at least, it was successful to curtail the powers of Health Director Dr. Amy Acton.
The provision would limit stay-at-home orders to 2 weeks. Extending those orders past 14 days would require approval of a legislative panel. House Speaker Larry Householder says his members should play a role in these major decisions.
I don't see it in any way affecting what the governor is trying to do. I commend what the governor has did so far, but I think there has to be legislative oversight.
The move faces an uncertain future in the Senate, and it most certainly will be vetoed by Governor DeWine.
Yeah, and
they don't have the votes now to override his veto.
Yeah, and as WOSU reported this morning, it represents a shift and sort of a rift in the GOP. You did have some Republican lawmakers who voted against this. That can be rare. You don't always see that. You usually see Republicans are more likely to be in lockstep. Democrats united against this. House Minority Leader Amelia Sykes called it disrespectful. She wore a mask while she said that.
Yes.
As we said, Larry Householder did not wear a mask.
Oh, she had much more to say than that. On paper, she released a statement that said that Dr. Amy Acton was being targeted because she's a woman. Quote, this is what Amelia Sykes said, quote, this is what happens when a single party of mostly men are permitted to dominate both chambers of the state's legislature. Their fragile egos are hurt that a woman has more power and is more relevant than they are. Unquote. Ouch.
Yeah, pretty strong words.
Yeah.
I mean, whether or not they're true, we'll leave that to someone else. Governor DeWine has also been very involved in this process also. It's not just Amy Acton. She's been very out front as far as a leading voice in how the state shouldn't be scared, right? She's been a sort of a hand on the shoulder of every resident of Ohio. And she's been a leader.
Yeah, and part of it is the tension between the executive branch and the legislative branch. Now, in other states, other legislatures are trying this. But in those states, for instance, Michigan, the legislature's run by Republicans and the governor's a Democrat. Here we have Republican on Republican disagreements, which is odd. It's not a partisan disagreement. It's more of a, you know, intra-party squabble, free market versus public health emergency. What powers does the executive have? What role does the legislature play? Honestly, I think that the vote yesterday was largely symbolic. I think they know that they're not going to curtail the powers of the governor. The Senate has said, Larry Alboff has said, look, we'll look at this down the road, but now is not the time. I think these lawmakers are hearing from their constituents. They can go home and say, look, I took a stand against executive overreach, and they can satisfy at least some of their concerns of their constituents.
Oh, sure. A lot of this was politics. As we said, even if it were to pass the Senate, it doesn't have a veto-proof majority in the House. Governor DeWine could, as his office said he would, could just put an X through this and it would go away.
Yep. But I think it shows that the tension in the state, you mentioned earlier, the unemployment, folks are hurting economically and they want to get back to work. And, you know, they're going to do it. We're starting to do it.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sonali Goster from WOSU Public Media. A couple of other political stories this week. One involves the aforementioned Dr. Amy Acton, the director of the Ohio Department of Public Health. This week, she was featured in a glowing editorial video produced by the New York Times.
So how did Dr. Acton do it? To find out, we watched more than 7 weeks of press briefings, and we noticed themes that, well, let's just say other leaders should pay attention to. First up, she empowers us. Take a look at this clip from the day Dr. Acton issued that stay-at-home order.
I don't want you to be afraid. I am not afraid. I am determined. But I need you.
So a glowing editorial video that went sort of viral, at least here in Ohio, by the New York Times. That was the positive news for Dr. Acton this week. But this week she was also greeted at least twice by protesters outside of her home here in the Columbus area. The protesters denounced her stay-at-home orders and called for her to be fired. Governor DeWine came to her defense and said the demonstrations outside of her home crossed the line.
you can demonstrate against me, that is certainly fair game. But to bother the family of Dr. Acton, I don't think that's fair game. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's necessary to get your point across.
So what do you think, Steve? Are you allowed to protest?
I'm sure you're allowed.
Is it right? Does it cross a line?
I mean,
Dr. Amy Acton, she's gotten high praise for what she has done. But she is the face, along with Governor DeWine, perhaps even more of the face of the state's response to coronavirus than anybody. These are controversial decisions. Is it wrong to protest at her house?
I'll say it's weird, right? Like,
yeah.
It strikes me as, I certainly would never do it. I don't want to tell somebody they're not, it's not a look that I'm going for. I'm trying not to denounce it, but trying not to praise it as well. It's very strange to me that I don't understand the minds of people who would do this. If they want to, I suppose they're legally allowed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they're not doing, I mean, some of them were carrying guns. I mean,
that's what neighbors say. Yeah, we never saw any proof of that, but neighbors said they saw at least one person carrying a firearm.
Guns are legal in America, but guns also scare the hell out of a lot of people. I don't really condone this behavior. I guess I will say that. I don't think it's appropriate. They obviously shouldn't be punished, but I don't know how you really put a stamp of approval on protesting outside someone's home while holding guns.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, if there are rules for engagement for protesting, I think that the elected officials should be treated differently than appointed officials, and I think you should protest at their place of business, where they're conducting their public business, rather than their private home. But they have a right to do it, and there was no real reports of violence or anything other than sort of being loud. Bexley, the town where Dr. Acton lives, put up signs saying that town ordinances asked the protesters to be quiet, which I found kind of humorous.
That's very Bexley. That's the most Bexley thing I've ever heard. Because this is a city that was so divided when a local small college was going to put lights on their football field. They were all up in arms over that.
You got to be loud, and you can't be too bright.
That's great.
You can't be loud. You can't. Apparently, a bullhorn is illegal in Bexley. That could go all the way to the Supreme Court as well.
While we're talking about people who probably take things a little too far, we have given it a rest for a few weeks, deciding to honor the best in our political leaders. But since politics is back, since people are protesting outside of people's homes, so is the Snollygoster of the Week Award.
This week, we give it to Ohio State Representative Nino Vitale, a Republican from Western Ohio. Let's just say he is not a fan of government efforts to stop the spread of coronavirus.
No, he's not. He's compared stay-at-home orders to being under house arrest, and that could lead to civil unrest.
I wonder if he's ever been under house arrest. House arrest is
a little more extreme.
Yeah, you can't go to the grocery store to get a gallon of milk, I don't think, if you're under house arrest.
I'm not sure if you can or not, but
you certainly can't go out to get a bottle of bourbon at your liquor store.
Oh,
that
sounds
essential,
terrible.
That essential trip if you're under house arrest, I believe.
Sounds horrible. He posted the conspiracy theory that Bill Gates wants to lock us down for profit by charging us for mandatory vaccinations. And
first, can we say that we don't have a vaccine yet?
Right.
And no one has mandated you get a vaccine. Just fact checking there.
And this week, the state should not mandate the wearing of masks because, according to Nino Vitale, it dishonors God. I didn't know that.
Apparently.
He says our faces are made in the image of God, and putting a mask over the part of it hides the image and likeness of God. News to me.
Yeah. Everyone has their own religious beliefs.
News to Amy Acton.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll leave it there. State Rep Nino Vitale, you're
thanks,
our Snollygoster of the Week. You're shrewdly good into the headlines. Whether your arguments make any sense, we'll leave that to other folks to decide.
Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.